So we sort of, when we're in Washington, we sort of brand this as America's large energy infrastructure project.
The head of the Gasline Corporation says the Trump administration is helping the project move forward. From Alaska Public Media, this is Statewide News on Alaska News Nightly for Wednesday, January 24th. Good evening, I'm Lori Townsend. Also tonight, Governor Walker considers other candidates for District 40.
Governor Walker, after communicating with the Democratic Party in House District 40, is also going to interview two other people.
Those stories and more tonight on Alaska News Nightly.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station.
The University of Alaska's founders knew that to build a great state, we would need a great university. Today, UA offers more than 400 degrees and certificates with campuses from Kotzebue to Ketchikan. They are leaders in Arctic and Alaska research and dedicated to direct hands-on teaching, whether online, in the classroom, or in the field. Greatness awaits you. See how the University of Alaska can help you achieve at alaska.edu/start here. This message sponsored by the University of Alaska.
Governor Bill Walker faced a deadline today to pick a state representative for District 40, which covers North Slope and Northwest Arctic boroughs. Walker hadn't announced a decision by our deadline. The seat became vacant on December 25th when Dean Westlake resigned following allegations of sexual harassment by female legislative aides and women outside of the legislature. Walker spokesman Austin Baird says Walker chose to look outside of the first three candidates nominated by the local Democratic Party.
Governor Walker, after reviewing the three initial candidates that were forwarded by House District 40, he did do interviews in person here in the state capitol with all three of those candidates. In addition, though, after communicating with the Democratic Party in House District 40, is also going to interview two other people.
Those new candidates are Kotzebue resident John Lincoln and Utqiagvik resident Abel Hobson-Suvlu. Baird says Walker wants someone who is well prepared, but declined to say why Walker didn't choose from the original nominees, Kotzebue City Council members Eugene Smith and Sandy Schroyer Beaver, and Utqiagvik resident Leanna Mack. Whoever Walker selects must receive support from a majority of the 16 state representatives who are Democrats before taking office. District 40 Democratic Party Chairwoman Jane Windsor says Walker's office consulted with the local party, but Windsor says she's frustrated that the local party didn't have the time to open up the application process again. State law requires the government appoint a replacement within 30 days.
If they wanted another list of three, to me, the only fair way to do that is reopen an application and so forth. But by the time that they were really looking at that, it was too late.
Windsor says many of the qualified residents in the district avoid partisan politics due to their work with Alaska Native corporations, and some potential candidates would have taken a pay cut to join the legislature.
Even if they can work, you know, the rest of the year at their regular job, it is still going to be a significant financial blow. Probably, especially the last couple of years with not knowing how long the session is going to last.
Kotzebue's John Lincoln is the vice president responsible for managing lands for Nana Regional Corporation. Abel Hobson-Suvlu of Utqiagvik is advisor to the president of Arctic Slope Native Association. Lawmakers in Southeast Alaska are concerned about the possibility the legislature could draw money from Alaska Permanent Fund earnings without a plan for the future. As part of a Coast Alaska series, Alaska Public Media and KTOO's Andrew Kitchenman reports.
Independent Representative Dan Ortiz from Ketchikan sees the Permanent Fund as a major asset for the state.
That Permanent Fund is the best thing that's happened in the history of our state in terms of government action. And it's really important that we preserve that.
He says he's willing to use the funds to run the state government, but he doesn't want lawmakers to open the door to an annual process of deciding how much to take from permanent fund earnings.
No, that's not acceptable. We can't do that to the public.
Sitka Republican Senator Bert Stedman says doing that would be too risky.
The ad hoc draws are very deadly because 21 members of the House and 11 members of the Senate, could clean everything out except for what's constitutionally protected in the permanent fund.
To solve that problem, Stedman proposed a constitutional amendment that would limit the size of a draw from the fund and protect permanent fund dividends.
You wouldn't have the permanent fund to go to and just rob chunks out of. The drawer would be closed, and the lock on it would have been spun, and you wouldn't have the combination.
For Stedman, this could be enough for this year. He doesn't see the need to pass a broad-based tax now as part of the fiscal plan. Juneau Democratic Representative Sam Keto III disagrees. He says he'll resist passing a bill drawing from the permanent fund, like the Permanent Fund Protection Act, if it doesn't include a broad-based tax. He says including a tax as part of a comprehensive plan would ensure the plan is sustainable and that its effects on different groups are balanced.
I do think it's only a piece, and I do have a concern that if we pass the Permanent Fund Protection Act without additional broad-based revenue, that it will be virtually impossible to get broad-based revenue at any point in the future.
The nonpartisan Legislative Finance Division estimates that if the legislature only draws from the permanent fund without additional revenue, there will be a budget gap of more than $500 million. Sitka Democratic Representative Jonathan Christ Tompkins says this is why he supports taxes as part of a comprehensive plan to balance the budget in the long run. He's also concerned that if the legislature draws from fund earnings without a plan, it will continue to draw from earnings unpredictably in the future.
This is one of the reasons why we need to pass a fiscal plan, because you can't live in la-la land and think you can balance the budget simply talking about government waste and cutting government when there's really no practical way to cut government anywhere close to the amount needed to balance the budget.
Different versions of plans to draw from the permanent fund are currently being considered by the legislature, including Stedman's constitutional amendment bill. Some include taxes, some don't. In Juneau, I'm Andrew Kitchenman.
The magnitude 7.9 earthquake early yesterday morning in the Gulf of Alaska prompted emergency tsunami alerts that popped up on thousands of Alaskan cell phones. As we reported yesterday, the National Tsunami Warning Center's alerts even went to phones in Anchorage, where there was no threat of a tsunami. That's because communities in the same alert zone, like Whittier, could have been struck by a tsunami. But another group of Alaska cell phone customers around the state did not get the message via the Wireless Emergency Alert Network, subscribers to GCI. Federal Communications Commission guidelines have gotten the largest cellular companies in the U.S., like AT&T and Verizon, to upgrade their systems to deliver the alerts. But GCI will not be sending those messages until next year. Not automatically, anyway. GCI spokesperson Heather Handyside says that's because the company is among roughly 100 smaller wireless providers that needed more time.
The longer deadline is because this is a very complicated, data-intensive process that involves tens of thousands of wireless phone numbers and geolocating them. So it's very complicated.
Handyside says a 10-person team has been working on the upgrades for about 6 months. She says GCI will be integrated with the Wireless Emergency Alert System by May of 2019. In the meantime, GCI says it offers its more than 100,000 wireless customers an app to get emergency alerts. It can be found wherever you get your smartphone apps by searching GCI Alerts. Still to come on Alaska News Nightly, distillery operators react to new rules banning cocktail sales.
They've put in a wildly inconvenient contrivance that is so absurd, it's nearing comical.
That's ahead. Stay with us.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station.
Did you know while exposed to secondhand smoke, every breath you take can damage your heart? Cells lining blood vessels become swollen and inflamed. Plaque builds narrowing blood vessels, and clots can form, robbing the heart of oxygen. Exposure to secondhand smoke increases your heart disease risk by up to 30%. It's your heart protected. This message sponsored by Alaska's Tobacco Quitline, 1-800-QUIT-NOW.
President Trump is being credited with helping advance Alaska's long-sought gas pipeline project. Alaska Gasline Development Corporation President Keith Meyer told the Fairbanks Chamber of Commerce yesterday that Trump administration goals dovetail with selling North Slope gas to Asia.
We're really getting a good reception in Washington, and it's largely because we have a project that fits very well with the administration goals of trade and infrastructure and energy export.
Meyer says AGDC is spending a lot of time in Washington working with the White House and agency officials on the estimated $43 billion Alaska Gasline project.
And so we sort of, when we're in Washington, we sort of brand this as America's large energy infrastructure project.
Meyer credits President Trump's relationship with Chinese President Xi with helping grow interest in Alaska gas, pointing specifically to an April 2017 meeting.
In that meeting at Mar-a-Lago, Florida, President Trump, because of the work we had done in Washington, mentioned Alaska LNG.
Meyer says that led to Xi and other Chinese officials visiting Alaska and Governor Walker signing an agreement with China to explore a financial backing for gas line capacity deal.
And so this, to me, really sets now our course, a lot of our focus for 2018 to finalize the definitive agreements for this relationship.
Noting that the state additionally has MOUs to buy Alaska natural gas with Vietnam, Korea, and Japan, Meyer says a lot of paperwork has to be processed. He does not anticipate final decisions by China and other buyers and investors until 2019. The board that regulates Alaska's legal marijuana industry has a more industry-friendly chair. State marijuana regulators also reacted to the Trump administration's more hardline approach to marijuana. KTOO's Jacob Resnick reports.
Mark Springer was elected Wednesday by fellow board members on the Marijuana Control Board. Board member Brandon Emmett, an active proponent of legal marijuana, praised Springer's tenure to date.
You've been a member of this board since its inception, and I feel that you've brought a very measured approach to all the decisions you've made on the board. I think you make a fine chair.
A Bethel City Councilman, Springer replaces Soldotna Police Chief Peter Malarnik, who some pot business owners had accused of being a prohibitionist hostile to the industry. Carrie Kerrigan, Executive Director of the Alaska Marijuana Industry Association, said by contrast, Springer has proven even-handed.
I consider him extremely objective and really well-read, thoughtful about what he makes decisions on. And I've seen him pull back on things which I thought maybe could have been pushed forward. But at the same time, it's because of that thoughtful approach that I think he's going to be a really big addition. And I really approve of him as being the chair.
Malarnik resigned last month after U.S. Attorney General Jeff Sessions released a memo calling marijuana, quote, a dangerous drug. Sessions also rescinded Obama administration-era legal guidance to federal prosecutors advising them to defer to state laws. Malarnik explained his resignation, saying the Trump administration's posture undercut the legitimacy of state-regulated marijuana. But Alaska's Department of Law says it's still business as usual.
In terms of the day-to-day operation of Alaska's licensed marijuana businesses, the Sessions memo by itself doesn't change things.
Assistant Attorney General Harriet Milks advises the Marijuana Control Board. She told the board Wednesday that the most troubling aspect of Washington's hostile approach is the roadblocks that remain for banks to do business with the industry.
There's some concern, it's just concern, that financial institutions will be ever more reluctant to work with cannabis businesses, and that will leave the multi-billion dollar cannabis industry highly vulnerable or more vulnerable to criminal activity, not to mention creating problems for states' efforts to track and collect taxes.
Most banks already refuse to accept the proceeds of legal marijuana for fear of running afoul of federal laws. Alaska's Attorney General has joined 18 others to petition Congress to update the law. And Malarnik's resignation also leaves an opening for a public safety designee on the board. That's since been filled by Governor Walker, who's appointed North Slope Borough Police Chief Travis Welch. Welch's appointment and the reappointment of two other sitting members will be subject to confirmation by the Alaska Legislature. In Juneau, I'm Jacob Resnick.
A 23-car pileup closed a slippery stretch of the Johansson Expressway for nearly 3 hours on Tuesday afternoon. Only minor injuries were reported, but the chain reaction wrecks closed the two westbound lanes between Pegger Road and University Avenue right after four State Department of Transportation snowplows had passed through the area. KUAC's Tim Ellis reports.
State Transportation Department spokeswoman Meadow Bailey says the weather we've been having over the past week has created the perfect conditions for very slick roadways.
We had rain last week, followed by freezing temperatures, and then this continuous dusting of snow. And when we have conditions like that, there's really nothing we can do to get that layer of ice off the road.
Bailey said Tuesday afternoon the DOT's been trying its best in recent days to clear snow and at least scratch the surface of the ice and then spread sand on it.
We have all of our resources out right now, all of our equipment that's available, all of our staff. They've been working since last week.
In fact, she says the crews and equipment were working on the Johansson Expressway Tuesday afternoon, immediately before the drivers of 23 vehicles lost control in a chain reaction wreck near the western end of the expressway.
We actually had four pieces of equipment out, two regular plows and two tow plows. They were plowing the full width of the Johansson and putting down sand really just before this crash.
Bailey says two snow plows that were sent to make one last run over the Johansson were instead unable to get through because of the pileup, which closed the two westbound lanes from about 2:45 to 5:30 p.m. She says the wrecks should focus the minds of motorists on the need to employ such wintertime driving habits as slowing down and maintaining a safe following distance.
This was a section of road that was sanded and plowed very recently, and it's just a reminder to everyone you need to slow down in these conditions.
Alaska State Troopers say only minor injuries were reported. Troopers handled the wreck with help from UAF and City Police. Fairbanks Police Spokeswoman Yumi McCulloch says city officers had responded to five wrecks and three motorist assist calls by about 5 Tuesday evening. She says City Police are urging motorists to just slow down, even if some stretches of road don't look as slippery as they really are.
Got that thin layer of ice on there and a little bit of snow on top of it makes it seem like it might be okay.
Temperatures around the pileup were around 15 below, and troopers say the borough sent a public transit bus to the scene to give motorists and their passengers a place to warm up. Troopers say their investigation into the wrecks is ongoing. Meanwhile, Bailey says DOT crews will continue to run blades over the ice and spread sand on it, but she says the area's roads are likely to remain slippery for a while. In Fairbanks, I'm Tim Ellis.
Costco may move into a Fairbanks building being vacated by Sam's Club. Fairbanks North Star Borough officials announced on Monday that senior Costco representatives have an agreement with the borough to occupy the 161,000-square-foot warehouse store building off College Road. A borough news release says the Costco reps met with borough mayor Carl Castle and other local officials last week and toured the big box store. The news release emphasizes that officials with Seattle-based Costco, quote, are in the early stages of evaluating the property, but are optimistic about moving ahead quickly. Sam's Club is scheduled to close its Alaska stores Friday as part of a nationwide restructuring.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by ConocoPhillips, investing in oil and gas production and creating economic opportunities for Alaskans. ConocoPhillips, Alaska's oil and gas company.
The Alaska Commission on Post-Secondary Education offers student and family education loans with interest rates lower than the federal plus, and they can be used at college and training programs in or outside of Alaska. Get more information at 800-441-2962 or visit acpe.alaska.gov/radio. This message sponsored by the Alaska Commission on Post-Secondary Education, Alaska's higher education state agency.
The list of Alaskans headed to the Winter Olympics in a few weeks just got a little longer. Snowboarders Rosie Mancari and Ryan Stossel will represent the United States in South Korea in February. Mancari and Stossel both grew up in Anchorage. Stossel is a graduate of Service High School. He competed at the 2014 Olympics in Sochi and in 2015 won gold at the World Cup Championship in Austria. The 25-year-old will compete in two snowboarding events, Big Air and Slope Style. Olympic rookie Rosie Mancari started snowboarding at Alyeska when she was just 3 years old. The 24-year-old graduated early from South High School to snowboard full-time in Colorado. Mancari will compete in the race-style snowboard cross event. Mancari and Stossel joined the growing list of Alaskans qualified for the 2018 Olympics. So far, there are four cross-country skiers qualified for the Winter Games, and more are expected to be named to the Olympic team this week. Two Juno judges are both retiring this summer, but it's unclear if applications will be immediately accepted for both seats or just one. The Alaska court system hopes to upgrade one of the seats to deal with increases in the numbers of serious criminal and civil cases. KTOO's Matt Miller has more.
Juneau District Court Judge Thomas Nave is retiring at the end of June. Nave was appointed to the bench in 2010. Still to be determined is whether that seat will be refilled or if it will be changed to another Superior Court seat at the Diamond Courthouse. Doug Woolover, Deputy Administrative Director for the Alaska Court System, says they're proposing legislation to add a new Superior Court judge. Money for the additional salary and benefits, about $35,000 a year, would come from previous cost savings. The new judge will share staff with the two other Superior Court judges already working there. Woolover says Superior Court cases are bottlenecked at the Diamond Courthouse.
The Superior Court handles felons and district court misdemeanors in the criminal arena, and Superior Court does all family law matters and probate matters and things like that. So, you know, sometimes district court cases can also be very, very complex, but in general, Superior Court work is more time-intensive and more complex than district court work.
The other district court seat is currently held by Judge Kirsten Swanson. Woolover says the new Superior Court judge could step in any time as a district court judge. The new judge could also preside over cases in other communities as the need arises. After nearly 7 years on the bench, Juneau Superior Court Judge Luis Menendez is retiring the same day as Judge Nave, June 29th.
In Alaska, judges have to retire when they're 70. And so Judge Menendez falls into that category.
Suzanne DiPietro, Executive Director of the Alaska Judicial Council, says they're accepting applications from anyone who's worked as a lawyer in Alaska for the last 5 years. Wide range of experience in criminal and civil law in Alaska is ideal, but not required. Applications are due by February 2nd. The council will do background checks on all of the applicants and send a survey out to Alaska attorneys asking them to comment on each applicant's qualifications.
And the council's process is very clear that not all the qualified applicants will be nominated, but only the most qualified of the group, the cream of the crop, the tallest timber is how the constitutional founders referred to it.
The council will meet in Juneau to interview the applicants and hold a public hearing before selecting at least two nominees. Governor Bill Walker will then have 45 days to appoint someone to the bench. Reporting in Juneau, I'm Matt Miller.
Alaska's distilleries are bracing for a shift that will bring big changes to their tasting rooms. On Tuesday, the Alcoholic Beverage Control Board adopted new regulations banning distilleries from serving cocktails, at least in the traditional sense. KHNS's Abby Collins reports.
The ABC board voted 3-1 in favor of new regulations that mean no more gin and tonics, Moscow mules, Negronis, or other mixed drinks at Alaska's distilleries.
I understand this is a contentious issue.
That's ABC board director Erica McConnell at Tuesday's meeting.
And I understand that this has a lot of impact on our 9 distillery licensees.
The rule, drafted by the Department of Law, clarifies what qualifies as a, quote, distillery's product, that is, specifically a distilled spirit made on site. It does not include ingredients like tonic, syrups, and juices used to mix drinks, even if they're made on site. Distilleries have been operating tasting rooms since they were legalized in 2014, and cocktails have been a part of the equation. Janilyn Hager's family owns Skagway Spirits, a distillery opened in the Northern Lynn Canal this summer. She worries about the new regulation significantly changing the experience of visiting her business.
I know that all of the distillers are doing the same thing. We're harvesting local botanicals, and we are creating unique cocktails that are really showing off what we do in a unique environment. So the whole thing is an experience. Part of that, at the very least, changes now with this decision.
There is one catch with the new rule. It does allow mixers to be provided at distilleries, but staff can't mix the drinks behind the bar. Assistant Attorney General Harriet Milks addressed the difference.
An issue that the Department of Law raised was that if you mix the distillery's distilled product with some other substance, as long as you have, I think it's 0.5% alcohol, you have an alcoholic beverage, and that's your jurisdiction to regulate those alcoholic beverages.
So you could get a ginger beer, lime, and vodka separately, but the customer would have to mix them together on their own if they wanted a Moscow Mule.
We can make some fun out of it, I guess. We will certainly make fun of this decision.
Brandon Howard owns Amalga Distillery in Juneau.
They've put in a wildly inconvenient contrivance that is so absurd, it's nearly comical. The fact that I can put an ounce and a half of gin on the counter next to a glass of tonic, and then the customer can take that ounce and a half of gin and pour it into the glass of tonic, and that is fine.
Howard is still hopeful cocktails will get back on the menu.
It just goes to show how badly a legislative fix is needed. I think it's good for us to now focus our energies on seeing HB 269 pass through.
He's referring to pending legislation introduced by Representative Chris Tuck. House Bill 269 would clarify in state law that distillers can combine the, quote, distillery's product with other ingredients, giving cocktails the okay. Legislators who signed on to the original tasting room bill in 2014 have said they never intended to prohibit the sale of mixed drinks. Over 500 pages of public comments were submitted on the new regulations. At Tuesday's meeting, Director McConnell said the majority of comments supported the continued sale of cocktails. But Assistant Attorney General Milks told the board the quantity of comments should not define the response.
Public comment is never a popularity contest, and it's never a numbers game. So somebody can generate 200 or 500 or 1,000 form letters. That doesn't make those public comments worthy of necessarily any more weight than you give the two or three independently written comments.
The new rule is not in effect yet. The regulation still needs to be reviewed by the Department of Law and signed by the Lieutenant Governor. It goes into effect 30 days after getting that signature. Reporting in Haines, I'm Abby Collins.
And that's all for this edition of Alaska News Nightly. Tonight's stories can be found at our website, alaskapublic.org. We had reports tonight from Dan Bross and Tim Ellis in Fairbanks, Andrew Kitchenman, Matt Miller, and Jacob Resnick in Juneau, Casey Grove and Emily Russell in Anchorage, and Abby Collins in Haines. Our audio engineer is Dave Waldron. Wesley Early is our web editor. And I'm Lori Townsend. Good night.
Alaska News Nightly was made possible by
the statewide BP Teachers of Excellence program. You can nominate your favorite teacher at bpteachers.com. The deadline is February 1st.
Find out how you can include a gift to your public radio station through estate planning. Ask your financial advisor or contact your public radio station to learn more.
The Federal Subsistence Board is accepting applications through February 2nd to fill seats on the 10 Subsistence Regional Advisory Councils. Councils meet at least twice a year and provide critical advice to the board on subsistence management issues. Individuals may apply or nominate someone for membership. More at doi.gov/subsistence/regions or call 800-478-1456. This message is sponsored by the Office of Subsistence Management.
One of the greatest honors for a public media station is delivering on its promise to provide quality programming and news you can trust to the communities it serves. What you hear on air is the result of a dedicated team working together to bring you the best. It's a privilege to be a part of your day. Thank you for listening, for your feedback, and for your support. This is Statewide News on Alaska Public Media.